Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The United States puts more people in jail than any other country. The U.S. represents about 4.4% of the world's population, but it houses 22% of the world's prisoners. Over a 30-year period, the incarceration rate has increased 500%. The U.S. now has a prison population of more than 2 million people. But there have been efforts to employ restorative justice as an alternative to using formal discipline or punishment. The new documentary, Tribal Justice, which airs on PBS tonight, explores the criminal justice reform movement used by two of the largest Native tribes in California. And two women are leading the way. Abby Abinati, a chief judge of the Yurok tribe on the North Coast, and Claudette White, she's chief judge of the Quechan tribe in the southeastern desert. They focus on restoration and community involvement rather than punishing offenders. Their approach keeps tribal members out of prison, prevents children from being taken from their communities, and stops the school-to-prison pipeline that plagues their communities. Tribal Justice premieres tonight on the PBS documentary series Point of View. You can find out more about it at yourcallradio.org. Today we are joined by the film's director, Anne Makepeace. Anne is a writer, producer, and director of award-winning independent films. Hi, Anne. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on.
Great
Appreciate
to have you.
It.
Thank you so much.
Great to be on with Abby.
Congratulations on the film.
Thank you.
We're also joined here in studio by Abby Abinanti, chief judge of the Yurok tribe on the northeast coast of California. Judge Abby is the first Native American woman to pass the California bar exam. She established the first tribal-run clean slate program in the country to help members expunge criminal records, and she focuses on keeping young people out of jail, in school, and with their people. And Judge Abby joins me here in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Well, Anne, I want to start off with you. Congratulations on this film. It's so important, especially as we're having this conversation about criminal justice reform. First of all, how did you learn about these two methods of using alternatives to formal discipline of punishment? How did you learn about these two incredible women?
Well, I was fortunate to be asked to make this film by the woman who became our executive producer, Ruth Cowan. And Ruth had been introduced to Abby and Claudette a few months before she connected with me, and she got very interested. She's really a political scientist, but she had produced a film earlier and was showing that film in San Francisco when she met the woman who became our fabulous consultant, Jenny Walter, and Jenny suggested the two judges who eventually became featured in Tribal Justice, Judge Abby Abinanti, who's with us now, and Judge Claudette White. My priority in making a film is, of course, it has to be about an important topic, but in order for audiences to stay with it and take in the information and the worlds that it opens up to them, you have to have central characters. You have to have people whose stories you're following. And for me, it's important to follow stories over time so that they have a beginning, a middle, and an end. So my requirement, really, I guess, for taking on this film was that we be able to follow stories in these two tribal courts in order to reveal how they work through those stories, through human stories. Mm. So, you know, it's kind of a cliche to say that in documentary, you know, 90% of it is casting. Well, the casting was not just Abby and Claudette, but the people who were coming before them in court and the stories we eventually ended up following in their courts that really do reveal how, or at least to some extent, reveal how the tribal justice systems work, how they're different from state courts, how they work with state courts. All that is revealed through these very compelling stories that we followed over 3 years of filming.
3 years of filming, and you went to these two tribes, the largest tribes in California. And how much mm-hmm. did you know about these tribes before you started filming?
I actually didn't know anything about the Quechan tribe. I knew about the Yurok tribe because I'd lived in Northern California, but I hadn't, I guess I'd driven through, I hadn't really visited them, so it was basically all new to me. And I did. I really knew nothing about tribal courts. I've made a number of films in Native communities, so I, you know, I've had worked on reservations, but never focusing on courts. But it was a whole new world, and that's the great thing about documentary films is it brings you into new worlds, and you get to discover people and their stories and you know what they're doing in this case anyway to you know fight for justice and fight for the survival and the health of their communities.
Judge Abbey, you are Chief Judge of the Yurok Tribe on the North Coast, the largest tribe in California. Can you tell us a little bit about your tribe, where it is, how many people live there?
Well, we're located on 1 mile each side of the Klamath River from the mouth, 54 miles up, and we're constantly trying to rebuy property and expand our base. That's where we're located. We're in two counties, two northern counties, very rural, which are Del Norte and Humboldt County.
And talk a little bit about how many people live there, a little bit about the history of the tribe.
There are a little over 6,000 of us at this point, and most of us live on or near that reservation in those two counties. In the history, we've always lived there. We went through the period that known as the invasion and the massacres. We went through indentured servitude, through people coming and taking the children and removing them for boarding schools. And in 1993, we organized pursuant to the federal government's requirements. And from that point on, we formed a government, and the courts came soon after that.
You are the first Native American woman to pass the California bar exam. And in the film, you talk about how lawyers tried to push you around. At one point, a judge said to you from the bench, "You can't be a lawyer, you're an Indian."
Yes, that's true.
Can you talk about what that experience and how you pushed through that to be where you are today?
I think you just can't take that sort of thing personally, even though they mean it personally. You know, some people just have no home training. I don't know what to say. You know, you don't act like that. I wasn't raised to act like that. So my response was always to stay focused on my purpose and on my values and not let their practices take over my value system. Because if you do that, then you're kind of drowning, in my opinion.
And why did you want to get into this work and become a judge?
When I was set to graduate from college, there was a program that allowed us to get a scholarship to go to law school, and I personally had no interest in it at all. But some older women from the tribe said, "Well, you should go," and we proceeded to have a several-week-long, I guess you could say, argument or discussion, and there's really no way to win arguments with old ladies, so eventually I just went to law school.
What's interesting about the film is learning about the differences between tribal courts and state courts. Anne, can you talk about what you learned there? In the film, Judge Claudette says that being in the state system is intimidating because there are so many players and people just get lost in the process. They get lost in the system. And she says that doesn't happen when you're dealing with tribal courts.
Right. So, as you know, as Abby points out early in the film, a big difference between state and tribal courts is that in state court, a judge can't know the people that come before them. If you know somebody, if you're a state judge and you know somebody who's coming before you, you have to recuse yourself. You can't hear that. That's not the situation in tribal courts. Tribes get to write their own constitutions. And traditionally, again, as Abby says, traditionally they would never have thought of asking a stranger to resolve a dispute or adjudicate. They would go to an elder, a wise elder, and ask that person to adjudicate. And also in tribal courts, if you couldn't know the person who came before you, you could never have a judge from that tribe because everybody knows everybody. But it's really, from what I've observed, it's a huge advantage because, you know, when Taos, for example, who's one of the people we feature in the film, he was facing a third strike conviction when we first began filming him in Abby's court. Well, Abby knows his parents, probably knew his grandparents, knows his girlfriend, knows her kid, and so she has a a big picture. She knows where he fits in the community. She knows where he fits in the family. She can make judgments about whether he's really telling the truth, whether he's really going to work on his rehabilitation and live a good life. So she can make judgments. And the same with Claudette, with a teenage boy who comes before her very early on in the film. She knows him. She knew his mother, who had passed away several years before. She knew his whole history. And so she could say to him, "How would you like to try singing?" Because she, and singing is not just like ho-ho-ho singing. It's sacred. It's singing songs from the culture that tell the stories of the origin of the culture. So it's a very sacred and serious thing. But she knew that he and his brother used to sing.
Mm.
So for that, she knew how to reconnect him because she knew their family. So that's a huge difference. Another difference is, and Abby can correct me if I'm wrong about this, but I think a big difference is caseload. If you look at the scene in the later part of Tribal Justice where one of the people we were following is in state court, and he goes in, he's handcuffed, and he's in his orange jumpsuit, and the lawyer's desk and the prosecution's desk have folders literally piled about 4 feet high, and the hearing, we filmed two hearings with this young man, a hearing where he was, I guess you would say, arraigned, and then a hearing where he was sentenced. And each hearing took, like, less than 5 minutes. With Abby and Claudette, they listen to the stories. They're able, or they make that time to really hear, you know, what the person has to say and evaluate, you know, how they should be handled.
Anne, are you talking about Isaac Pallone?
Yes.
Yeah, that was really interesting because that's Claudette's 17-year-old nephew, and she said that when Isaac was in the state system, she would call his social worker asking to care for him and didn't even get visitation. And she said that the state completely failed him, and what would have been different if he had been in the tribal system rather than the state system?
He's just been out of the state system. He was in foster care and in state group homes from age 11 to 17, or to 16, rather, when he finally came back, came back to the reservation, and Claudette, as his aunt, took him in. And so he's had, you know, serious damage during his childhood.
Judge Abby, can you talk a little bit about that? A lot of people do not know the differences between a tribal court and a state court. We've talked a little bit about it, but what else would you add?
A key bit of information right now is in this state and in most of the states, they're way underfunded, they're way overworked. So it isn't just our children who are getting abused or neglected, it's children who are in that system. Mm. And I think that's on all of us, that we allow that to continue, that we don't look at it, that we don't see it. It's not right. It's not right for society to treat children like that. You know, in the tribal system, we're a smaller system and we're able to look at that mistreatment and go, wait a minute, we need to do more. We need to do more for the child, for the parents, for the family, because they belong here. This is our responsibility. We have a responsibility to them and for them, and they have reciprocal responsibilities to us and to the place we came from. And if people aren't meeting those, then society can't go on.
How many other tribal courts are based on restorative justice?
You know, that would be hard for me to tell. I'm mostly at home, and that's what I do. And I think we talk about it a lot among tribal judges, and now we're setting up a new institute at Davis's Law School, which will help train tribal judges. And one of the main features is going to be, you know, we can do it differently. And we can do it the way we used to do it and take responsibility. And this is how you do it. Because a lot of times, I mean, I was trained in a traditional law school. I know how to do that. I wouldn't say I was a red-hot lawyer. I was an adequate lawyer. I worked hard.
And talk a little bit about how you were able to bring this restorative justice model to your tribal court.
You know, I didn't really look at the model. What I looked at is my own home place and how we would have done things but for the invasion and but for all the trouble that came our way. So I didn't really think of it as restorative justice. I thought of it as the Iraq way. And we have values and we have families and we have a culture. We have a dance life. we have responsibilities to the river, to the fish, to our environment. And so I took those responsibilities and I brought that to the justice system, which is how we would have evolved but for all these other problems. So I didn't really think of it as restorative justice. I just thought about it as, okay, you hunker down here, and now what are we going to do?
Hmm.
How are we going to make this right? We need to make it right again because too many people are suffering.
Abby Abinanti is chief judge of the Yurok tribe on the North Coast, and she is featured in the new documentary Tribal Justice. It airs on PBS tonight, and it explores the criminal justice reform movement used by two of the largest Native tribes here in California. And we're also joined by the film's director, Anne Makepeace. She's a writer, producer, and director of award-winning independent films. I hope you can see the film tonight, but if you can't see it, you can watch it online and find more information at yourcallradio.org. Judge Abby, one of the other things you talk about in the film is wanting to really break this cycle. So if you're dealing with someone who, for example, we were talking earlier about Tao, who was drinking, he got addicted to meth, he had three strikes, he faced a lot of time in jail. And you talked a lot about how if the parents are drinking and are addicted to drugs, usually the children do the same, and then their children do the same. And one of the goals is to try to break that cycle.
He wanted to break the cycle. He didn't want his child to have the life he had. And that's what's really important, you know. But wanting to break the cycle and knowing how to break the cycle is, you know, that's two different things. And what I try to do is give them an opportunity to be what they want to be. Because most people don't wake up in the morning and go, I think my career goal today is to be a meth head, because that seems like a really good idea. People just don't think like that. You know, it happens, and then they wake up and go, oh, my God, what happened? Why is this my life? Can I get out of this, or is there a way out of this? And for a lot of them, there isn't. You know, but if they're willing to try, then we have to be willing to try to help them. And that's really all that is. I mean, he wanted out. He did not want this for his child. That's the key difference. He needed help to do that. And parenting was never meant to be an isolated event, a sort of a one-on-one event. It's meant to be a community practice so that when you back in community, you get that reinforcement. You get it from the schools. You get it from the family. You get it from dance. You get it from everything. You know, and it's consistent, and it's a value system. And when you have that value system, it changes how you act.
Because of the abuse that Taos had to endure as a child, he said he grew up hating and being violent. And he was taken away at a young age, taken to juvenile hall, and then the California Youth Authority, followed by prison, which for so many people, it's just a cycle. They go in and out and in and out. But thanks to the tribal court, he did not have to face 25 years to life. The community got involved, the court got involved, and I mean, as far as we know in the film, Taos is doing well, but can you talk just a little bit about that? I mean, he did so much work, but the community also came together to make sure that he had a job and had a place to live.
He's basically a very hardworking individual, and he wanted a different life, and he wanted to give back to his community. Because at a certain level, I think, particularly among Yuroks, who are the people I know the best, it's sort of a genetic message or coding. You know, we do know at some level what we should be doing. And once we're given the opportunity to do that, many, many people do that. You know, they don't want to be ashamed of themselves. Nobody wants that. You know, and there's very few in the world, very few truly evil people. You know, sometimes it happens and a person gets really broke and that's a sad thing. But for the most part, it's people who make horrible mistakes. You know, and how do you get back from that horrible mistake? Is there a way back? Is there a way back? And if there is, then you have to help that person walk back.
And as you were getting to know Taos and watched the process involved in reaching out to him and trying to help him, and then Taos really wanting to make a better life for himself and his family, what went through your mind when you saw that and then you see what happens in state courts? Or if crime is committed, for example, in a place like San Francisco, you know, a lot of people say, find the person who did this and throw them in jail. We don't really talk about how this happened. What happened in this person's life to make them commit that crime, for example?
Right. Well, I mean, one of the things that I like to think about is that Isaac is where Taos was 10 years ago. So Isaac Pallone is the young 17-year-old that I was talking about earlier, Claudette's nephew. And his story in the film does not have a good end. But on the other hand, again, Taos was in San Quentin. I'm not sure if 10 years ago is exactly right, but wow. You know, when he was Isaac's age, he was in San Quentin. So I think there's hope for Isaac.
Just thinking about the possibilities of restorative justice, and we're sending so many young people into the system, the California Youth Authority, and then they end up in prison. And statistics show that it's just a cycle. And if they get three strikes, they're in for a long time. And it just shows that if you have restorative justice and a judge like Abby, who actually cares about people and has the time and the resources to try to get them work, to try to get them a job, there could be a positive. But it takes resources and it takes time.
Right. I mean, a big difference that I see in between state and tribal courts, and also there are restorative justice courts, but at any rate, the emphasis in tribal courts is, how did this problem arise? How can we help this person? How can we get this person back into the community, leading a productive life? Whereas in generally, and this is kind of a gross generalization, but in most state courts, it's like, okay, what's the right punishment for this person? Whatever law, you know, 68753, okay, that mandates X number of years, and boom, your sentence, goodbye. Now, there are drug courts that do work on wellness, and those are part of the state court system. And there also is a big movement towards just restorative justice in state courts, and the new one that just began using speaking techniques based on Native American techniques of dispute resolution. It just opened up in Cook County in Illinois. There's the Red Hook Brooklyn Community Justice Service that has a court that is based on Native American practices that is about healing and community, and they also have a peacemaking program. So there are state courts that are looking to the ways that tribal courts have always resolved disputes try to reshape their thinking to the extent that they can. You know, they are bound by rules that judges have to recuse themselves if they know the person coming before them. But these two courts that I mentioned and a number of others across the country are starting to see the value of looking towards healing rather than punishment, because mass incarceration is just not working. It's destroying lives. It's expensive, too, you know, so you want to look at it from that point of view. Restoring people to the community is a lot cheaper than locking them up. Mm-hmm. So those are some ways that I think tribal justice, which is not really synonymous with restorative justice, I think the goals are the same, mm-hmm. but Abby can elaborate on that probably better than I can. But there is a movement in state courts towards a more healing kind of justice that I hope my film, Tribal Justice, will inspire more of that in courts across the country. And it is being used that way. It's being shown at a number of conferences about justice systems and court systems, and it's also being shown in law schools. So I hope, you know, that it will have that kind of influence in inspiring young lawyers coming up, both Native and non-Native, and inspire judges who are working in the state system now, both to collaborate and work with tribal courts and to use some of their methods in their own courts.
Anne Makepeace is director of the new documentary Tribal Justice, which airs on PBS tonight. It explores the criminal justice reform movement, or tribal justice reform movement, used by two of the largest Native tribes in California, the Yurok tribe on the north coast and the Quechan tribe in the southeastern desert. We're also joined today by Abby Abinanti, chief judge of the Yurok tribe. Abby is the first Native American woman to pass the California bar. And you can find more about tribal justice at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about the new documentary Tribal Justice, which debuts on PBS tonight. It explores the criminal justice reform movement used by two of the largest Native tribes in California. And if you can't watch it on PBS tonight, it is available online, and you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Today we're joined by Anne Makepeace. She's the film's director. She's a writer, producer, and director of award-winning independent films. Abby Abinanti is chief judge of the Yurok tribe on the north coast of California. Judge Abby is the first Native American woman to pass the California bar exam. And this is a pre-taped Your Call, so unfortunately, we cannot take any of your phone calls. Abby, before the break, Anne was talking about the differences between tribal justice and restorative justice. And as she said, restorative justice is getting a lot more publicity now and a lot more attention because of the criminal justice reform movement. How would you describe the differences?
You know, I haven't given it a lot of thought, but I know as far as our tribe, what we look to is our own values, the values of the tribe, to develop practices. And restorative justice, I think, is looking to a value system too, but it's not our value system. And I think it's really important that justice be defined by the values of the people who are involved in the system. And I think when you try to impose on a large community sort of uniform values, you can get to a place like we've gotten in this country where you create more harm than good, and where you then assume, okay, justice has one default meaning, and it just doesn't. You know, it's a much more fluid concept than we've been taught.
Do you speak much with, say, your former colleagues that you used to work with about these issues?
I am involved in the tribal court, state court forum that was set up by the former Chief Justice Ron George. And that's a forum that features discussions between the state court, judiciary, and the tribal courts. And I think it's very important. And it's a movement that, you know, that we've strengthened, and I think is gaining more momentum and more energy, because I think we have a lot to offer to each other, mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of support, and I find it a very helpful forum.
In the film, State Superior Court Judge William Follett says that the state court doesn't give up jurisdiction, but we can put someone on probation and they must comply with the Yurok Tribal Court. He says there are no rules in place, they're not written down anywhere. How does your court, for example, interact with conventional courts? What's that like?
Well, I guess a good example would be domestic violence. If somebody's convicted of domestic violence in a state court setting, they're often sent to a 52-week program called a batterer intervention program. Two of our probation officers, who are also counselors for drug and alcohol, have been state certified to deliver that 52-week program. In addition to the state program, that program features a cultural component, so that we actually interact with them to fulfill their state requirement, but with a cultural component part of their program. And we look at sort of the larger problem, not just the battery. You know, for instance, we had somebody who had parented a number of children, who had fathered a number of children, but had not really been an involved parent. So part of our program was to say, we want you to be a better parent at the end of this, and we helped that person work on his parenting. And that particular person wasn't actually a member of our tribe. We took him as a favor to the state court because he had repeatedly flunked out of the state program. And the judge said, would you at least try, because we have no other place? I said, sure, you know, he can come in with our program, because we have a different emphasis. We were really on, let's try to make you into the person you want to be. And a lot of people find that to be really useful, not just Native people.
How is he doing today?
He's done really well. He graduated. He was one of the people who graduated from the 52-week program. He's not been in trouble again for the last couple of years. We also feature you know, if you have a problem, call us. Don't wait till you're in trouble. Come by, see us, you know, let's talk it through, let's work it out. And if you need more help around your parenting or stuff, you know, you can always call us. We'll always help you. because my position is we all live in community together, and it's in a rural area, you have a lot of intersection.
We were talking about culture, and someone in the film said, I have, maybe it was you, Judge Abbey, I've seen people have complete turnarounds due to singing.
I think that was in Claudette's court, because they were talking with her nephew and bringing him back to singing, and it's a very important part. I mean, we also have some of the same practices as to singing, and we have very involved dance culture.
Can you talk more about bringing the culture into the courts and maybe give us an example of when that was used and why it's so important?
Well, in simple things like fines. If you have a fine and you're fined $100, we might say, well, all right, instead of paying that fine, I want you to do this for an elder, or I want you to take fish to a dance, or I want you to, and you will get credit for that because we want you to be involved in the community. So there's a lot of that kind of, this is your responsibility. Another example would be if somebody gets a ticket for leaving their net in the water too long. Say two people get a ticket. The first one says, well, I overslept. Well, then clearly you owe the fine because you overslept, knucklehead. Mm-hmm. You know, so you can pay the fine or you can take fish to dance camp this weekend. Which would you rather do? Oh, I'll take it to dance camp because that's right. And one of them said to me at one time, well, how will you know I did it? I said, you're in here for oversleeping, not for lying. So I assume that if you tell me you're going to do it, you're going to do it. Not to mention which, I will be at the dance and I will see you. You know, and the second person was, oh, I couldn't get my net out because my cousin didn't go help my auntie, who is older, who I know. And so I had to get her net out first. And I'm going, okay, well, in that case, then you didn't commit the offense because it's right that you went down and helped your aunt before you took your net out. But I want you to go talk to your cousin because that's not right that he acted like that. Mm-hmm. You know, so that kind of thing. You know, so it's weighing all of the parts of it.
And how long have you been doing this work for the tribe?
I started quite a while ago. I worked first in the fish court and then part-time when I was a state court judge. We worked out an agreement that would allow me to take time off, you know, my time and go up there, and I did that. And then in the last few years, I've worked more full-time at home.
What are you finding is most effective over the years that you've done this work, especially when you're working with people like Taos Proctor, for example, someone who has been in the system, taken to juvenile hall, taken to the California Youth Authority, which was followed by prison?
Well, I have a very strong belief in us as a people and in our culture and our values, and that sees me through most of the circumstances we find ourselves in. And I think that people respond to that, our people respond to that, and respond to it in me and in themselves. You know, you're asking them to be their better selves. You're not asking them to become something they aren't. You know, so it isn't something they don't understand. And you live there and you realize the interrelationship between you and the environment and the community and the fish and the river, and you have a sense of responsibility, and it becomes apparent to you. Mm.
Abby Abenanti is Chief Judge of the Yurok Tribe on the north coast of California. Judge Abby is the first Native American woman to pass the California bar exam. She established the first tribal-run clean slate program in the country to help members expunge their criminal records, and it also focuses on keeping young people out of jail, in school, and with their people. We're also joined by Anne Makepeace. She is director of the new documentary Tribal Justice. It airs on PBS tonight. It explores the criminal justice reform movement used by two of the largest Native tribes in California, the Yurok Tribe on the north coast and the Quechan Tribe in the southeastern desert. In the film, we also meet Claudette White, who's chief judge of the Quechan Tribe in the southeastern desert. And the film will also be available online. You can find more information about it at yourcallradio.org. And Judge Abby was the mentor of Claudette White, who's the chief judge of the Quechan tribe in the southeastern desert. I mean, she's an amazing young woman. Tell us a little bit about her and what it was like to work with her.
She does have an amazing story. She was the first in her family to graduate from high school. She went to went off to college at Northern Arizona University, and then went to law school. She became the youngest tribal member ever to be elected to her tribal council. I think she was, this was between college and law school, so she was like, I don't know, 22. And then when she was appointed as the chief judge, she was just out of law school, and I think she was by that point in her early 30s. So she's just, you know, kind of amazing that way. And her father returned home from Vietnam, very messed up by the war, and he died of a drug overdose when I think Claudette was in high school. And, you know, she's pulled herself up by her bootstraps and got scholarships and made it through school. And she's just a very compelling person. She's a single mother, and she's chief judge of the Quetzon Tribal Court. She also is a traveling judge and serves as a judge for many of the Colorado River tribes. So she's a force of nature. And, you know, working with her was great. It was hard to get a case in her court because, for whatever reason, the people that were coming into her court just did not want to be filmed. I mean, it's very understandable, because if you're coming into court, you're in some kind of trouble, whether you're petitioning or whether you've been accused of something. It's a vulnerable time for people. And so it really took 2 years to get a case that was actually going through her court. And that case was the case of Drew Denard, 9-year-old boy who was in state care at the time, and his mother was trying to get him back. So we were able to follow that story, that case, as it progressed through state and then tribal court. But while we were waiting to get a case that was actually going through Claudette's tribal court, we began filming with her nephew, and Claudette opened her doors and let us film her family, and that was really incredible. So we began filming the story of her nephew. His case, he had a juvenile delinquency case going on in the state court system. He was 17, just been released from a state home himself. And I can't remember if I said this earlier, but his story did not at first seem like it would become an important story in the film, mainly because we're trying to follow cases in the tribal courts themselves. His guardianship case was in tribal court. Claudette was able to become his guardian through the tribal court. But again, as I said, the juvenile delinquency charges were in state court. But his story in the film does become very important, because you really see the difference between what a state court looks like and what tribal court looks like.
Yeah, and you also learn about just what some of these young people go through. In the case of Isaac, in the film, he talks about drinking with his mom when she got frustrated. She told him she would choose her beer over her children, and then his mom contacts him on Facebook and texts him when she's drunk. He lives very close to his father, hardly ever sees him, but then when he does see him, they end up drinking together. And, you know, I have to ask you, Judge Abby, I mean, for so many reasons, there's a lot of alcohol and drug problems on tribal lands. There's always, in the media, there's so much focus on the negative. But you learn about what these kids are going through, like Isaac, for example, having to deal with, you know, drinking with his parents. I mean, how do you think that we should speak about these problems honestly, but not just focus on the alcohol and the drugs, for example?
Well, the country has managed to really brutalize poor people. That's not just Native people, but all poor people. And that is not to our credit. It just isn't, you know. And that's something that we have to live with. And you have to look at where that comes from. And it's very painful. It's painful for them. But there's no good in not facing it and not saying, this is what happened and this is what I can do. This is what I am going to do. You know, and I think it's really important that we look at that, because these things happen, and they did happen. And how, Isaac, do you now make that a part of you? You know, look at somebody like your auntie. You know, she went through a lot of hardship about her father. And you must put that in a place in your life, not hide it, not pretend like it didn't happen, but you must deal with it, you know, and teach them how to deal with that being crushed, with being hurt, because you can't stop the hurt, you know, but it isn't all that he is, and it isn't all his family is.
What do you think about this, Anne? I'm thinking about, you know, when the national media does a segment on Native Americans, they tend to focus on alcoholism or poverty. And as Judge Abbey said, we can't ignore these issues, but sometimes that's the focus of the issue. What are your thoughts about that as a filmmaker?
Well, as a filmmaker, I was drawn to telling this story because of these two amazing women who I think are models. And you know, the story of addiction is not the only story on Native American land with Native American tribes. You know, there are people who have, you know, are embracing the culture and living in two worlds successfully, like Abby and Claudette. And I think it's really important to focus on that there are success stories, and those stories can be models for those who are having trouble. And, you know, I think that the addiction problems that are on reservations stem from a history of, you know, land loss, of generation after generation of children being taken away initially to put in boarding schools where they were, you know, forbidden to speak their languages and punished for doing anything to do with their culture, and they were separated from their families.
Yeah.
So those nightmares come down through the generations. Abby's mother went through that. And so addiction is there for reasons. Yes, poverty, and that's true across America for various reasons. But there are models of people who are coming out of those generations but succeeding and living good lives. And I think, you know, I'd like to think that tribal justice is a story of hope, that healing can happen, and that if you can heal the parents the way the Taos' story plays out with the help of Abby's court, then his little boy, who's also featured in the film, is going to have a good life, and that's going to reverberate down through the generations.
Judge Claudette White, who's the chief judge of the Quechan tribe in the southeastern desert, in the film said that historically, when they were trying to get assimilate, they removed Indian children from their homes. Families were sent to boarding schools. They died from lack of connection to culture and identity. She said the percentage of Indian children taken and placed in state care is still 3 times the national average. She also said that the cases that are most dear to her and the most challenging are the cases dealing with family and children, because a lot of children need help. And as I said earlier, Judge Abbey, Judge Claudette says that she looks to you as a mentor. You graduated law school when she was born. What do you think about the next generation, people like Claudette? I mean, she's got a long career ahead of her, and she's really helping the children and the families of her tribe.
I think we've always been blessed by our young people, and she's one of those blessings. You know, she's smarter than I am. She's tough. She will get the job done. You know, I have a lot of confidence in her. She was really just being polite. You know, she's done most of this on her own and at home with her own people supporting her. And I believe that she'll make a huge difference. And, you know, you look at our young people, and they're strong. And the place we came from is strong, and our people are strong. We've been here, we're going to be here, and they have courage, and they will get it done.
There was a scene of you, Judge Abbey, speaking with young Native lawyers. Can you talk about that? What are you hearing today from young people, and especially young people who want to pursue this field?
I think people are very traumatized in this country about sort of where they see the country going and the negative energy in the country, and how are we going to realign the wealth in this country. I mean, for a Yurok person, for instance, if you die with a lot of things or a lot of money, then everybody goes, oh, that's too bad. We're so sorry that you were so selfish. You know, so it's a whole different way of being, you know, but people have to make their own choices. You know, we need to get back to making our choices and saying, look, if you want to go to law school, then what are you going to bring home? You know, if you want to go to medical school, if you want to be a mechanic, who are you going to help? You know, when somebody's auntie's car won't go or they need help, are you going to help them? You know, there's lots of things that you can do and you must do when you're in community. And it's just to remind people of that.
And what are you doing to ensure that what Judge Abbey is talking about and what Judge Claudette talks about, the work that they do, is part of the broader conversation that we're having right now about criminal justice reform, about Michelle Alexander's book, The New Jim Crow, about Black Lives Matter? I just think this focus on restorative justice and culture is so important, such an important part of that larger conversation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, and I have committed to, I'm not starting a new film, I'm committed to getting this film out as broadly as possible. I'm really thrilled about the POV broadcast tonight, and, you know, millions of people will see it there, but we're also arranging screenings, as I said earlier, in law schools, at conferences. It's going to be shown at the National Indian Education Association Conference. It has been shown at a conference on ethnic fairness in the courts. I don't have them at the tip of my tongue, but there are a number of conferences coming up. I also have an educational distributor, Bullfrog Films, that will be getting the film out to, you know, selling DVDs basically to law schools and high schools and colleges across the country. So, you know, my job is to make the best film I can make in a way that is going to compel people and draw them in emotionally and get them to think about the issues in the film and care about them and then, you know, do something about them, help or go to law school and work to reform the system. So that's what I'm doing. I mean, you know, Abby and Claudette are in the trenches. I'm a storyteller. Primarily, I'm a storyteller. And I like to think that the stories that draw me are, you know, are important and will have impact. And I'm working as hard as I can to make that happen.
And Judge Abbey, what are you hoping comes from this film and this experience of you traveling around and talking about it?
I hadn't really thought that part out. You know, I grew up in a time and place where I didn't really watch TV or have much interaction with film, so I'm not aware of the impact. You know, I appreciate what Anne said and that she's going to do, and I've been trying to help her do that. You know, and from our standpoint, we're hoping that the story gets out a little bit because I think that tribal people are invisible in this state and across the country, and I don't think it's good to be invisible. It's not, if I had a choice about a different superpower, I'd choose a different one, I think.
I think a lot of people would agree with you, especially at this moment in time. Final thoughts, Judge Abbey? I was just thinking about that. I mean, we have shows every day about criminal justice reform, what's happening in D.C., poverty, all of these issues. What final words would you leave with us about where we are right now?
I think it's important for every person's voice to be heard. And even when things are, you look out and you go, oh, this is really bad, you know, and sometimes we look at the tribe and go, this is a horrible state of affairs. But at heart, we are, and humans are good, and they have a tremendous capacity to do good and to bring that into their community. And everybody has a responsibility. You know, it's not your responsibility or mine to fix the whole world. It is both of us have a responsibility in our world to do the right thing and to be good people and to be kind. And that, I think, is what you have to urge people to do, you know, and to not, in that moment when you can be mean or when you can join a force that you look at and go, it's not right, you have to say, no, I'm not going to do that. I won't do that. I won't be a part of that.
Abby Abinanti is chief judge of the Yurok tribe on the north coast of California. Judge Abby is the first Native American woman to pass the California bar exam, and she is featured with Claudette White, chief judge of the Quechan tribe in southeastern desert. in the new documentary, Tribal Justice. It airs tonight on PBS, and it'll also be online. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. And Make Peace is director of the new documentary, Tribal Justice. She's a writer, producer, and director of award-winning independent films. Judge Abby and Ann, thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Rose, and it's good to hear your voice, Abby.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Vancouver and San Francisco are iconic West Coast cities with many things in common, including large numbers of people addicted to hard drugs. In recent years, Vancouver has been at the forefront of new approaches to addiction, including safe injection sites. San Francisco is considering similar programs for its 22,000 intravenous drug users. So what can we learn from Vancouver? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with Renee Kemp and you.